You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
us with your light. Running like a red disease. Running like a red disease. Get to people. Stop giving up yourself. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're
going
to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life there's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't and it had to get done, you got it done anyway. That's why we love you and appreciate you. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, and any of the time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. You hit at the top of the page, you'll see podcast. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. A little easier, just go to Baba Oshi. OSHI.net, BabaOshi.net, and there will be programs right there for you. Yes. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Monday, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed out of Philadelphia. Acres of Diamonds. From 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. And then on Saturdays, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. And once again on Sunday, it's Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. on Sunday with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. My good brother, Bomani Taimba, will be my guest on Friday. So get a chance to hear from him and the great things that Africa for the Africans are doing. But go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. And check out the website. If you want to go to the motherland, if you want to go to a trip of a lifetime, everything you need is right there on the website. He has a trip in November 18th through the 29th to Tanzania, December 24th through the 20th to January 5th, 2022 to Ghana, April 1st to April 11th, 2022 to Senegal and Gambia, May 24th to June 5th, once again to Ghana. And all of these trips are $3,700 a piece. Go to Africa for the Africans. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com. Go to Facebook. What the heck happened here? Your device ran into a problem. It needs to be restarted. Man, sometimes, you know, these computers. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani. 2007. Kind of put a little, you know, I need the computer because I got the, you know, the announcements. Well, maybe we ain't supposed to be doing them. So let's continue on. Once again, this is, today is Renoko Rashidi's birthday. I will have on Wednesday a tribute to Renoko. My guest will be Brother Sangor Bey,
who is the field general for the Pan-African Federalist Movement. He will be my guest, and we will talk about Renoko's contribution to our struggle. He was truly a African warrior scholar and a primary researcher. He documented the African presence around the globe. Okay. Habeshaw Incorporated, once again, I promote them. And, of course, Habeshaw Incorporated doing excellent work, working with our children with sustainable agriculture here in the Atlanta area and in Ghana. The Kashi Project in Ghana is growing. So, Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta. Wadada's across the street from Soul Veg, down the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is Shrine of the Black Madonna, is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. And their services are on Zoom. So if you want to check out the services of Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Medu Bookstore. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia, I talked with her just recently. Some great, exciting things are going to be hopefully happening as the pandemic winds down. And she can, because she has a beautiful store, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Give Mama Nia a call if you have a book that you're looking for at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, Brother Gazimde Ajamu, has a beautiful establishment. He's done great work with the space he has. You need to check him out in Lithonia, the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. If you're looking for a book, he also has T-shirts, clothing, the red, black, and green shoes. And, of course, he has a coffee bar serving delicious African coffees and teas. And the number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, as we like to say, family-centered economics. The Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10, from 9 p.m. to 10. Go to blogtalkradio.com, blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. Or give a call if you want to listen or make a question or comment or concern at 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Scents. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. That's Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Give our sister Shelly Amundsen a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. She has a whole array of items, stuff that for those brothers who have a nice beard, grooming stuff like that, incense, and you name it, T-shirts. I mean, she's got it going on. Her and my good brother, Kimwardo, love them. Good people. Sanjay-Aiti. Sister Gabriella is doing excellent work in the island of Haiti. We know our prayers and our concern go out to the brothers and sisters in Haiti. They suffered another earthquake and a hurricane on the way. Damn. But this hurricane was west of Port-au-Prince. You know, if you know the island of Haiti, it has a lot of coastline. It's that part at the bottom that kind of sticks out. She's in, Sister Gabby is in the north eastern portion of the island in the hills, doing great work. So check her out at Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, AYITI.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Yeah, I lost all my stuff. That's a bummer, dude. You know, sometimes the technology just don't work like it should. You know what I'm saying? You know that. Baba Baruti and Mama Ya Baruti at Akabin Institute, brothers and sisters, they have a teaching our young warriors. Go online and go to PayPal and Cash App, let's say online, to give contributions and donations to Akabin Institute. If you want to get books, Baba Baruti, prolific writer, go to akabinhouse.com. Akabinhouse.com. Yeah, I mean, my computer said, we're going to start all over. I'm like, damn. I had everything set up, you know? It happens like that sometimes. And when those things happen, brothers and sisters, just be prepared to go to the next step. You know what I'm saying? I know it. You know I know what you're saying. And you know I know what you're saying. Okay. I'm really excited. I'm going to read the Enye Sasim. And after I read the Enye Sasim, I'll get to my guests. Also want to thank the Shrine and the UNIA. A great Garvey Day celebration this past Saturday. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed my good brothers, the Black Circle, for representing. Great presentation by my good friend, Dr. F. Keith Slaughter. Got to get a hold of him. I found out he's available on Friday. One of these Fridays, I'll get him in. Very good, brother. I used to be on his radio program to talk about Kwanzaa when he was on the Celestial Radio here in the mornings. But he's still on radio, I think online. So I definitely want to. Oh, okay. They brought me back to my original thing. That's cool. So I'm going to do this. Because one of the things I wanted to announce, and I'm quite sure my guests would appreciate, and that is this Wednesday, a book release that we're going to talk about in a minute, and that is 1148 Lewis Street, A Long Journey. This is Mama Tamu Kenyama talking about the Republic of New Africa and the attacks, the pre-dawn attack by the FBI and the local authorities of Jackson, Mississippi, on them, and her struggle to maintain the commitment to family and to our people. It's a great story. Great read. So this Wednesday, though, is going to be, this is the day that it happened, August 18th, 1971. And commemorating that day, and all the struggles that have happened. Great read. And that's going to be at the CORE, 2857 Main Street in East Point, Georgia, from 4 to 8 p.m. And she'll be speaking at 5 p.m. And I definitely plan to be there. And if you are in the Atlanta area, if you are hearing this, please share this and be at the CORE on Wednesday, 2857 Main Street in East Point, Georgia. Dynamic story. Come see her children and grandchildren and all those, and my good brother Baba Akima. And so we're going to be talking about that in a minute, but first we're going to go to the Enye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Boy, I tell you, I love it. August 15th. We as a people seem to be looking for someone who will tell us it's right to do the menticidal behaviors that allow us to accept our enslavement because we have some material or influential position advantages while we lack the power to control anything that happens to African people. We accept compromised voices as leadership, turning the other cheek, kissing the white man's ass. And you know it didn't say ass, but I just want to make that emphasis. While ours gets kicked, we do not accept behavior that we know is not right for African people, or fancy clothes, cars, houses, or popularity and fame. We fear losing acceptance and isolation, so we allow ourselves and our children to follow lying entertainers, politicians, teachers, and preachers. We accept the alphabet people who claim the rainbow as normal when we know that it's insanity. If we want to continue to exist on this earth, we have become a culture and a race of punks, afraid not only to speak truth, but even to hear it. Kwaku Nyong'o. We must be careful not to confuse acceptance and rhetoric with consciousness in our search for common minds. Do not assume based on clothes, walk, talk, occupation, business, residence, compliment, acquaintanceships, etc., that you are dealing with an African at heart. They can wear locks, kente, cultural tattoos, ankhs, rings, earrings, bracelets, necklaces decorated in the symbols of our ancestors, and still not be of us. They can attend our lectures, concerts, drum, and capoeira classes, and even travel with us on pilgrimage to our holy motherland, Africa, and still not know us. We can easily be fooled because we so want Africans to be Africans. However, the best weapon against their treachery is observation. Observance. The most concrete evidence of warriorhood is seen in action, constant, long-term action. Affirm, I kiss no white man's ass. Affirm, I kiss no cracker's ass. Oh, cracker ass crackers with their old cracker ass. August, in fact, when you hear my guest, Mama Tamu, you'll be saying like, yeah, cracker ass. August 16th. We done forgot how to put it in the ground. I mean, let me repeat. We done forgot how to put it in the ground. Patrick Lumumba Alexander. Historically, the capitalist system, the heart, soul, and movement of Urugu's economically determined world goes through cycles of peaks and thoughts and from prosperity to depression over and over again. And what happens to them, the owners of the means of production, affects us immeasurably worse. In looking at Patrick Lumumba Alexander's far-reaching critique of our direction away from seed and survival, we have to remember that we made it through the Great Depression because we were connected to the land. Wisely distrusting Urugu and determined to do for self, we grew and raised our own nourishment. We planted and harvested using our own minds and hands. We knew how to put it in the ground and raise it up. Those of us who think that we will be cared for by the state during difficult times forget that soup lines like Death Row are racist. Then, as now, we will be the last served in them, if served at all. Think, if this country completely fell today, who would be fed first and only? Knowing this and knowing that we cannot eat the material possessions we now take so much pride in, we are ill prepared for the inevitable. We have forsaken living priorities and invested in our time, energy, and mind, and what will feed us. This is a major area in that food is only next to water and air in what is necessarily sustains us. Without a working knowledge of agriculture and a conscious application of that knowledge, we will ever remain dependent on those who do, and be slated for a final starvation at their whim. We have got to remember how to put it in the ground, or we will die at the hands of enemies who do. Affirm, I know and practice land cultivation. Affirm, I know and I practice land cultivation. Brothers and sisters, that is the Inye Sasim of daily revolutionary thought. I'd like to introduce my guest, Mama Tamu.
Greetings,
Mama Tamu Kanyama. Let me just say first, I really enjoyed, this is a very good read and a clear understanding. I mean, I've always admired you and felt your strength, but now I understand clearly. You are a beautiful woman. I appreciate you.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mama Tamu. Yeah, let's begin from the beginning. We got an hour and a half.
So all right.
So let's begin in the beginning, because I know, you know, I think what's special about you, for me, of course, is that you lived in Milwaukee.
Right.
Yeah, you weren't born there, but you lived your childhood there and your early adult age there. And when you went through this whole ordeal with the RNA 11, you know, went back and forth consistently. You know, you were, man, talking about frequent flyer miles, girl. Yeah.
Yep.
So let's talk about Milwaukee, your time there. Let me brief you on that because we want to get to the real discussion, and that is what happened with Baba Akima, what happened with the RNA 11, how you were treated in Jackson, Mississippi, or in Mississippi, period, because not just that you were in Jackson, you were pretty much moving around the state. They were putting you in one place and taking you to another, and that whole ordeal, you know. But let's talk about the early part of your upbringing.
Okay. The early part of my upbringing, I, of course, like as you said, I was, you know, raised in Milwaukee because my family moved there when I was about 2 years old. So that was basically all I knew was Milwaukee. And for the most part, Milwaukee had such a small Black community at that time that, you know, you didn't really hear of any racial tension or anything because we were pretty much self-contained.
Right. We're isolated.
And, you know, the white people that we ran into were the teachers, bill collectors, you know, people at the stores, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't hear of them preceding, you know, or looking at us as though we were in their way or trying to take over or anything like that, because they just didn't bother with us, basically.
Right. Because, I mean, they had their side of town and we had a little small portion of our side of town.
Exactly.
It became the north side of town, but actually when we first went there, you know, because I was born there. And you know, I know you're a little older than me, not much, you know, but I know you're older than me. And so I understand, you know, your experiences there as well. I mean, in fact, when you moved on 14th and North Avenue, man, I was smiling. I was thinking of the Roosevelt Theater and all of the things that happened on North Avenue at that time, because that was our strip. Well, actually,
yes.
That was our strip, North Avenue and Third Street in that little area.
Exactly.
That was our strip. And but prior to that, Walnut Street was our strip, you know. And I know you experienced Walnut Street too, you know.
Yeah.
And so we didn't too much go outside of that, you know.
Right.
And then coming to learn that Milwaukee was a very segregated city. You didn't even remotely think about going to the south side of Milwaukee.
Right.
You know, because I participated in open housing marches. At least two of them, and that one across the 16th Street Viaduct when them, you know, they started throwing bricks and bottles at us and so forth. You know. Yeah. And then the last one I participated was that big one that came down Wisconsin Avenue for open housing. And you know, what we did, at least for me, because I was never, I kind of moved in and out with the NAACP Youth Council.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a couple of Republic of New Africa meetings when it was off of, I think it was Wright Street. I don't know. Were you involved at then or you were gone?
I was probably gone by then because our building was on Fond du Lac right behind Sears, down the street from Sears.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a huge building at that time.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. And so, you know, I have a good understanding and like you said, you know, as you wrote in the book, that I would, you know, have a lot of fond memories because I can visualize exactly, you know, and of course you know, after you got out of prison, jail, you were in prison. If you got out of jail, you came back and worked for Larry Harwell, who I knew well.
Right. Triple O.
Yeah, Triple O, the organization of organizations.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, you know, so.
Yeah.
So now. Where did you meet Baba Akima?
Actually, I met him at a dance. I was working, my sister and I were a part of ICDP, Inner City Development Project, and at a different center.
Where was ICDP at that time? Was it on King Drive or 3rd Street, 3rd and Center?
Third and Center.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Now that was the main one where Black folk. I shouldn't say the main one. It was the main one because it was big. It was beautiful and you know, in the right spot. And when I say the right spot, because so many people, you know, frequent that area.
Right.
But my sister and I worked with St. Boniface.
Oh, okay.
And we were in charge of organizing a Christmas party, And when we organized the Christmas party, you know, that invited anybody, all the ICDP people or any and everybody, mm-hmm. anyway. And it was being held at ICDP on 3rd. At that time, I didn't really know it came at that time, mm-hmm. and did not know that he was the director of that center.
Oh, okay.
But he was. And I met him there. You know, he was just playing around, joking with my sister, joking and arguing with her. And I kept jumping in it, and he kept dancing with me.
Okay.
And so that's how we met. And then we met again at another college dance that was given off campus. And then finally, when we really started to talking, was there was a conference in Madison, Wisconsin, for a black students were it was college students, but we also had some high school students there, and we were dealing with some of the issues and problems that we were having, as black students, as black mm-hmm. residents, period. But that's when.
Okay. Were you at North Division then, or were you or in college at the time?
No, in college.
In college. Okay.
In college. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. At UWM.
Okay. Okay. UW. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
And so then y'all.
And incidentally, he was there too at that time.
Oh, he was at okay.
He was a graduate student.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was, I think, sophomore, freshman or something. Okay. I don't remember.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so then y'all started developing in the relationship. Now, when mm-hmm. did the brothers and sisters, Dr. Mari Obadeli, begin to establish the Republic of New Africa?
In 1968.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But those brothers had, Imari and his brother, Gaidi, they had been, you know, involved in trying to create a better life for black people for mm-hmm. many years.
Mm-hmm.
And they were well known in their city, you know, as working with politicians and, you know, mm-hmm. I don't even know the whole history.
Okay.
I just, you know some of it, you know, how they were just so, so active, just, you know, really just involved their whole life. In, you know, our upliftment.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why I admire and have lots of appreciation and respect for brothers and sisters who sacrifice a lot of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, to help our people.
Right.
You know, even though they're family members, they're dead and have jobs and so forth, but yet they still try their best to move our people forward and begin to develop projects and programs and so forth, trying to raise the level of consciousness of our people and put us in a better position. And I have a lot of admiration and respect for that, you know. So I went to a couple of Republic of New Africa meetings back in the late 60s, early 70s. I think one mm-hmm. place I remember having a meeting at was off of, I think it was Wright Street, 3rd mm-hmm. or 2nd and Wright. You may not have been there at the time because that was, I think like the early 70s, you might have been gone already. When did y'all mm-hmm. decide to move to Mississippi?
Well, we didn't actually move there. We were there visiting.
Okay.
We had only been before when the shootout occurred. We had only been there for, that was the second day.
Oh, mm-hmm. well, welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome to Mississippi. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, tell us. So for the listeners who may not be familiar with the Republic of New Africa, what the Republic of New Africa was about and some of its tenets and what it was all about and tried to do.
Well, first of all, the Republic of New Africa believed in separation and independence because the feeling was that, you know, we would never be totally really part of this government. And, so they felt as though we needed to establish our own, which they did establish their own. And but, you know, of course, you know what happened. It didn't go where we had anticipated. But anyway, and we believed in the five states in the South because the Republic of New Africa's position was that black people have worked, fought, and died, you know, protecting this land. You know, lived on it for, you know,
hundreds
so long.
Years, yeah.
And that part of this should belong to us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we figure like anywhere that black people had struggled like that should be ours, but we only claim the five states in the South.
What are those states?
I'm sorry. Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, and South Carolina. And so we felt that our fight was legitimate and that we, and you know, worked with international law, because there are certain things in there that would support our belief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much what it was. And we figured that we were a capable people and we had plans. We had dynamic plans of what it could be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the power structure as it is will knock down anything that black people try and come together on. So, but
especially
it's still going on. I mean, mm-hmm. The government, it never folded. We just got knocked down, but never folded.
Yeah, especially because if you are planning anything that would be outside of what the dictates of the society is, that's, you know, definitely frowned upon and sedition. And the United States has claimed a sovereignty right over all the land, even land that was previously controlled and serviced by the indigenous people. That's why they could move them all over the place at will, and they did that.
Yeah.
You know? So the United States is the big bully. And if you try to do something to help our people, because I think that you were right. I understand what you're saying. You know, we worked that land from the 1600s all the way to that time.
Yep.
From can't see in the morning to can't see at night. And so
that's
we
right.
felt that that land, you know, was should be rightfully ours.
Exactly.
And so you were going to move to Jackson, Mississippi to make the claim, correct?
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. what happened is that we knew that it would take some time to be able to free the land, as we normally say.
Free the land.
And that is the land that we were talking about
mm-hmm.
when we say free the land. But we knew that that was a long process. And again, you know, having to go through international law, et cetera. But we felt that we needed to at least establish a land base, and it should be in Mississippi. And we know that that is not the way that, you know, we ultimately wanted to acquire land, but it was necessary. The officials felt like it was necessary to purchase a plot of land to begin our new communities,
mm-hmm.
and also for, you know, for the government centers and all that. There were two houses in Mississippi that were government centers that were rental properties, but the idea was that we need to purchase and have it and own it extent that you can own stuff in this country.
This is true because, you know, they can easily claim eminent domain.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm,
and if you don't go to court to maintain your rights to deal with it, then they'll, you know, because first they offer, at least now today, probably back then, they didn't offer nothing. Just take it. This eminent domain, get out of here. It's mine. You know,
yeah.
But, you know, now there are some people who have challenged it and some people have won a court, many people have not. And they're supposed to give you a fair market value for you to move, but that not being the case. So at that time, you know, you guys had two properties in Jackson.
Well, we
no,
had
no,
two,
they were rental
two
properties.
Rental yeah. properties,
right.
but we were in the process of purchasing land from a brother. And even though he had been, you know, harassed, but he was still willing to sell his land.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we had, you know, a really huge land celebration once we knew that the land was in motion.
Okay.
And they tried to stop us from having the land celebration. We gathered together, you know, people waited, you know, because we came in to Mississippi mm-hmm. by buses and flight or whatever, but you know, we waited until a significant number of us were gathered, and then we went to the to the site in a caravan. And they tried to stop us, but they were not successful. We were able to get to the land. The Ku Klux Klan threatened us. But we were not deterred by that. We had a great time, a great land celebration. We and it was called El Malik, which was going to be our capital. Flag was planted and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. It was a very emotional experience. Mm-hmm. You know, we were very excited. And but anyways, that was just for that weekend.
Yeah, because
then later, I guess he had been really threatened. The owner of the land mm-hmm. was really threatened, and he ended up reneging on the deal.
Right.
So that was shut down.
Yeah, because I mean. Definitely was probably threatening his life seriously.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm. You know. So hey,
yeah,
so then,
you kind of understand where he said was at. You know, because he had to protect himself.
Definitely, him and his family, and they would probably burn it down and do all kinds mm-hmm. of crazy. I mean,
oh yeah,
you know that's the thing that there's a history. You know, as Malcolm said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. There's a history of Europeans, Caucasians, white people acting so adversely towards us, particularly in this country and everywhere else.
Everywhere else. Yes. Everywhere else. Yes.
You know? So, just like Dr. Bobby Wright said, this defies all laws of probability. Everywhere they are and we are, they're in positions of dominance and control, and we're in a subservient position. Don't matter. On the continent and throughout the diaspora, this dynamic is crazy, and it has to end, and it must end.
It must.
Mm-hmm. So now you guys realize that the deal's not going to go through, and mm-hmm. you're at the two properties.
Right, and they at that point. Well, they were always harassing New Africans, but you know they seem to have really targeted and really put forth effort to take us down after that, the whole land celebration and stuff. And so they were consistent, and that brought us to the shootout because mm-hmm. they attacked the government, both government centers at the same time. There was, you know, a simultaneous attack, mm-hmm. whereas the one where Hakeem and I were, that's where the shooting took place.
Right, and that's 1148 Lewis Street, 1148 Lewis.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. Yeah. But the other place, the other center where the president and other officials were, they were already up and working, doing government work. So when they when the police and FBI were on the bullhorn telling them to get out of the house, you know, they mm-hmm. were able to respond immediately yeah. because they knew they weren't wanted for anything. You know, like, what is this? You know, they step mm-hmm. outside to see what's going on. But nothing took place, but they were arrested and charged with everything that we were charged with, which ranged from murder to mm-hmm. You name it, we yeah. had it.
'Cause
trying to overthrow the United States government, they just had so many charges, mm-hmm. it was ridiculous.
So what time did this shooting happen? What time did they attack y'all? Because that's basically what it was.
It was a pre-dawn attack. Mm-hmm. We were still asleep around 7, somewhere between 6 and 7 in the morning.
Okay. And mm-hmm. so they moved on y'all, and they shot into the building. Now, mm-hmm. from my understanding, based upon what I read, you said there was a ability to get out, you know, to get out mm-hmm. of, you know, a tunnel. Not to get out of the building, but just to go in that tunnel, because you were mm-hmm. being met by a hail of gunfire as well mm-hmm. as tear gas canisters.
Right, mm-hmm. which can also be deadly.
mm-hmm. Yeah. So you went into the tunnel, then finally you guys got out, and none of you were killed. None of the 11. That's a blessing.
Right.
That's
right, because there were 7 of us in that house mm-hmm. and 4 in the other house.
Mm-hmm.
and nobody had a scratch.
Yeah, but yet a law enforcement officer was killed. And, of course, yes. him being killed, you know, even though they have no idea who did it, because he probably got killed by a so-called friendly fire.
That's what I always said.
Yeah, because they were just firing indiscriminately. They're just loading up. Mm-hmm. And I know y'all fired back a few rounds.
Yeah.
You know, but in fact, they wanted to say that y'all had automatic weapons. Y'all didn't have automatic weapons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they took us to a lake area and had their ballistic expert to prove that it was automatic, but he was unable to. There was no way, you know, because they're saying that we argued the fact that we did not have an automatic weapon, mm-hmm. but they said we did something to make it fire automatically. And so they were going to have the ballistic expert to show that it did fire automatically, but he tried on several occasions,
mm-hmm.
tried turning a gun all kind of ways except inside out. And finally he gave up, you know, and told him he couldn't fire this thing automatically to save his life.
So on August 18th, 1971, mm-hmm. this Wednesday will be 50 years.
Right.
And I know you were in jail for about a year.
10 months.
10 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I read, you know, and I looked at that extensively to how you were treated and bouncing back and forth from this jail to that jail. And mm-hmm. you and the other two sisters having to bond and, you know, to rely on each other. And, of course, how you were treated, you know, where these people would try to incite you to say something or do something so they could, you know, hit mm-hmm. you, beat you, or do whatever they wanted to do. You know?
They're just doing things to annoy me, to irritate me, and mm-hmm. and for 8 months, I would think I was by myself in the cell by myself, mm-hmm. and there were other women, you know, local people in the other cells on the women's side.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they would, you know, do things like I say in the book, where they would give them clean linen and wouldn't give me any. I would have mm-hmm. to really act crazy to get some linen.
Yeah.
And, you know, with just things like that. And they would bring the food cold, and I most of it did not eat it anyway. Mm-hmm. But whatever they could think of, and then they would bring people down just to look at me, and I would just turn my back
mm-hmm.
and keep my head in a book.
Yeah, keep your head in the books. I hear you. And you talk with Dr. Obadeli, Mario Obadeli, and he said to you that you were not a member of the Republic of New Africa.
Yeah, blew me away. He wrote a letter and sent it, you know, because he was over there locked up with the brothers. They were on one side and I was on the other. We couldn't see or hear each other, you know, but we could pass letters to each other through the trustees.
Mm-hmm.
Trustees are guys who are incarcerated, but, you know, help the jailers.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so they would, you know, give us our letters, bring us our letters and things mm-hmm. like that. So he brought the letter and I read, and it just really upset me that he was saying that I wasn't a citizen because I had not officially taken the oath.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know how that got past us that I didn't, but, mm-hmm. but I hadn't, but he was doing that only in an effort to facilitate my release.
Yeah, because you're
and it did play a part.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So that was a good strategic move on his part.
Was.
So you can, you know, so you didn't have to stay in there as long as most people had to stay in jail and then ultimately into prison.
You know? Right.
Yeah. And so, you got out and you
mm-hmm.
and you came back to Milwaukee
mm-hmm.
and to help Baba Akima and all the other brothers and sisters in the Republic of New Africa who are suffering from this situation to get mm-hmm. released.
Right. You know? Yeah. I also still had federal time to do. Well, I had federal charges, not time, but I had mm-hmm. federal charges that I had to eventually go back and answer to. But that was after all the state trials had been had.
Okay.
None of the sisters were actually went to trial on state charges.
Oh.
Mm-mm. And it was three of us mm-hmm. in all. You know, one sister who was at the other house at the mm-hmm. other government center. And there was two of us in the house shooting took place.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so none of you guys faced any federal charges?
Well, I actually went to court, mm-hmm. but one of the thing that blew my case, well, the case that they had against me was because the informant had created a story.
Snoopy.
Yeah, Snoopy. And saying that, you know, that he had witnessed
right.
me being at a meeting to overthrow the United States government
right.
at a given date and a given time. Well, as it turned out, my passport proved that I was not even in the country during that particular time. So he reneged on his statement saying, you know, I might be mistaken. Mm-hmm. So that kind of blew that. And mm-hmm. so I was,
yeah, you were fortunate.
It kind of exonerated me.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, yeah. you were released. Listen, I'm going to take a break.
Okay.
And play a little music. In fact, I got one song that I'm going to play that mm-hmm. I know that you, and it fits what's happening. One is, of course, Roy Ayers, Ubiquity, Red, Black, and Green. Mm. But then I'm gonna play Kwame Cobb and Shavinduka, The Power of Faith. Imani, the power of faith, you know, for you.
Okay.
Brothers and sisters, cool. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. My guest is Mama Tamu Kenyama and her book, 1148 Lewis Street, A Long Journey, Republic of New Africa. Brothers and sisters, be right back and stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media. Part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That is for you, Mama Tamu.
Yes, thank you.
The beautiful sound of Sister Shavinduka out of Chicago. That is for you. Because when I heard that, I was like, yeah. Because this sister, you had faith. And it was strong, and you believed. I mean, you know, and even when Baba Kima told you that, hey, if I'm going to be here for a minute, you wait for me. I'll be out. But if I'm going to be here a long time, go on with your life. And you just didn't think about that. You were planning to make happen what has happened. And believe me, y'all, beautiful family. I truly enjoyed Kwanzaa the two times I had an opportunity to be at your home. For Kwanzaa celebration, beautifully. Let me make these announcements very quickly, and then we'll get back to our discussion, and so we'll continue on. And brothers and sisters, you can join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We do have a few people on the queue, and of course, you want to ask if you have a question or comment or concern for Mama Tamu, just hit star twice. On Mondays, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds program from 6 to 8, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then once again on Sunday at 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today with Mama Tamu Kanyama and the Republic of New Africa, the RNA 11, brothers and sisters who were in Jackson, Mississippi, and they got vamped on by the authorities of the Jackson, Mississippi Police Department as well as the FBI, and they shot into the home on 1148 Lewis Street. And indiscriminately, they just started shooting early in the morning. I mean, they gave you a warning, correct?
Yeah. 75 seconds.
Yeah. They gave 75 seconds. That's all you had until they opened fire. We have a call. Let's take this caller. 404-573-404.
Yes, Hotep family.
Hotep, my sister, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I'm well.
All right.
I'm not walking yet, but I wanted to get this comment into the sister. Mm-hmm. Sister, you have your badge of honor, your badge of courage.
Any
of us who are incarcerated, that's a badge of courage and a badge of honor.
Yeah.
And I wanted to let you know that. I was going to get mine, but the thing was called off. So I guess I have mine yet to get. But all of our heroes and sheroes have done that. So I'm proud of you. And peace to you all, family. Okay.
All right. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Sister. Thank you, Sister Lumumba. Appreciate you, Queen. All right. So let's get back to the situation now. We have, you decide to still to have a family. Baba Kima's in prison. And of course, where was he at that time when you were able to have extended visits, 3-day visits?
That was at Parchman.
At Parchman Penitentiary. Okay.
But the as I say, Parchman was a very intimidating place. But at the same time, they had, some humane attributes. But I realized the humane attributes were a part of their way of keeping people under control and keeping just that same slave master mentality.
Okay.
However, it benefited our family.
Right on.
Because not only did we have the 3-day visits, those were the very special visits, and you had to, you know, really earn those. And not everybody could get a 3-day visit. Our brothers were able to, with their perfect behavior, were able to get that kind of position where they could ask for 3-day visits, request those. But not only that, not only did they have the 3-day visits for, you know, for special times, but you also had conjugal visits on your regular biweekly visits.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was at Parchman.
Okay. And so then you felt confident, you know, one of the RNA 11 was Chakwe Lumumba, was he an attorney at that time also?
He probably by the time the brothers were actually went to court and all that was over and they were serving time, he was an attorney then. Okay. But, you know, we were all pretty young when the whole thing first happened. So he was in law school at Wayne State at that time.
Okay.
But, you know, he was getting ready to for his position as an attorney.
Mm-hmm. And I know he helped immensely, and the other attorneys that you mentioned in the book were tremendous in terms of battling for you guys, knowing that everything that they said was a lie, trumped up charges and a lie. But of course, we also know that many people have stayed, particularly us, and you know, have stayed in prison for decades on a lie, even when people have recanted and more evidence has been presented, just like this one brother. He's still in there. He's been in there after the evidence was presented like 5 or 6 years ago.
Wow.
You know, I tell you, you know, these folks are some evil.
Yeah, it's just amazing that we're all able to get out at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All three sisters
got out within a year.
Well, the two of them got out within a 2-month time, I would say, because the first sister got out probably in a month or so.
Mm-hmm.
They had taken us to Parchman and then brought us back for hearings and stuff to Hinds County, and she was not in the house where the shooting took place, first of all, but also she had an attorney. Her uncle was an attorney from New York, and I don't know how and what how they were able to collaborate, but they were able to get her out immediately. And then the other sister was pregnant, and so maybe 3 weeks, a month or so later, she was able to get out. Based on her pregnancy, because she really was in need of prenatal care.
Yeah, because she got kicked around and battered.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yep. So she did. She was able to get out, and I was very happy. All of us were so happy that the sisters were able to leave. But man, I felt like crying when she left. Was like, you know, I'm in this big cell all by myself, and nobody, you know, that to really talk to. There were, like I said, other sisters would come and go, you know, for weekend, for being intoxicated or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mostly short little time that they spent. And I, you know, couldn't see them or anything, but, you know, we would talk. And usually they had already heard about me and who I was. And many of them were pleased to meet me and talk with me. And, you know, I'm still trying to do nation building classes as they come in.
You're still trying to hip them what it's all about. Help them understand. Yeah. And so And so you guys decide to go ahead and to plan a family and to know that one day you will truly be free as a family, physically free as a family.
Well, I believed it, and mm-hmm. Hakima had been given a life sentence without the possibility of parole.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had 15 years of federal time.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't look like to the outside world that he would ever get out. And their intentions were exactly that he should never get out. But I don't know if it was insanity on my part or what. I just didn't believe that.
Right.
I just didn't accept it.
'Cause you had faith. You were determined. Yeah. You knew that, you know, that the law of justice sometimes does swing in our favor, and you believed that it would, you know, in this instant. And it held true. That's the beauty of that, you know.
Yeah.
So now he's been in, he served less than 10 years, right?
Yeah, he served 9 years.
Mm-hmm. Man. Yeah. In 1981, I believe it was 80 or 81, you guys were in Milwaukee, I think, because when did y'all move here to Atlanta?
We moved to Atlanta in 81.
In 81? Okay.
Yeah.
Because there was a event at Harambe Community School as a welcoming or welcome home, and I was there.
Oh.
Yeah.
That came as welcome home.
Yeah.
That was not 81. That was
80. That was 80.
Wait a minute. You're right. You're right. It was 80.
It's 80. Okay.
Because we moved here in 81.
Okay. I was there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Teju was there, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, my good friend, brother Tejumala Olubonye, the master storyteller, the great prevaricator, as I call him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, welcoming you home. And that was, and then finding out about the whole story and everything. That was, like I said, I had previously attended some Republic of New Africa because I had an idea what Republic of New Africa was about. But then, of course, seeing the people who are deeply affected by being members and to really trying to establish the Republic of New Africa and what they had endured. And it was great. And to see him and you there and to welcome you back home. Then you guys moved here to Atlanta. And, of course, you continue to organize.
Yes. Yeah, we after moving here, then we started the African Community Centers for Unity and Self-Determination. This was something that Hakima actually had pretty much drawn the blueprint for it while incarcerated. But, you know, I guess it was kind of like before its time, he tried to put it out there in Milwaukee when he first came home, but it didn't go anywhere.
Okay.
And then when we first came here, and again, it didn't catch on. And then at a point, you know, he called the family together and said, we're going to do this. And it was during Kwanzaa, as a matter of fact. It was that January he called us together.
Okay.
So that was in 2003.
Okay.
Wait a minute. No. Was that 2003? I guess it was, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it caught on and moved very, very well. At this point, it's kind of taken a nosedive, but but it hasn't folded.
Right. It's still there.
Yeah, it's still here.
It's still there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, some years later, us lifting us, the Economic Development Cooperative, I found out about it through Baba Tony Courtney, a good friend. In fact,
kidding.
No, that's how I found out. That's how I became a member. So I became a member before I moved here. In fact, I came to visit, and I stopped by your house to talk with Baba Hakima. He gave me some of the flyers that you had at the time to push it, you know, because he had recognized that I was a member of Us Lifting Us and believed, definitely believed in the concept. And, you know, but there was one part that was brought a definite smile to my face when you talked about the other organizations that were happening in Milwaukee, the commandos that assisted you when you got out of jail, which of course were a part of the NAACP Youth Council. Those brothers who got older became the commandos, you know. Mm. And then of course also too, you talked about the Topographical Research Center.
Yes, and, indeed.
Yeah, and Brother Dia Damani. Tony Corbin's brother, C5. I was like, man.
I'll always remember him. He's, you know, I was always working or doing something, you know, and to get my plane fare back and forth for my visits. But the when I conceived our first daughter, Damani actually rented a car and gave us money to come down. His wife and sister-in-law, the three of us drove down.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
Stayed with one of her relatives.
Uh-huh.
And that was my visit.
Right on.
when Allende was conceived.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you. Yeah, Dia Damani. He's in L.A. now.
Yeah.
He's been there for quite a while. I did speak to him about last year sometime. You know, and Tony Corden was here last month, I believe it was, and I talked with him. So, but then, so now, Baba Akima is working within the community. He established Us Lifting Us, and I know, I just felt so bad about it because I'm just be honest with you. I agree that maybe the location was an idea, but the membership of Us Lifting Us. I believe why it failed, did not support it. You know, the membership should have consistently said, hey, let's go down and buy some coffee. Let's go down and do this.
Right.
To continue to support it. That's what hurt me so bad. I know we had a nice group of brothers and sisters who were regular customers. We had activities and the work that Sister Akina did was just phenomenal. She was phenomenal. But all the others, too. And then the whole idea and the whole concept, I was so proud. And proud to do the work, you know, that we did in making it happen. The sweat equity, myself and Brother Kwaku and all of them, you know, Jelani and all of us, you know, the work that we did. But
I truly enjoyed working when you and I had to work together because your spirit, your spirit was just so uplifting and so positive.
I'm there to help and do whatever I can. To make us successful, you know, whatever we do, and I do it unconditionally, you know, because I take independence, self determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us seriously, you know. That's what it's about. So let's get some questions here, and we'll continue on because I know there's a lot more. Because I believe me, this book is a good read, brothers and sisters. You're gonna need to be at the core on Wednesday because that is the day it happened. 50 years ago, August 18th, 1971, in Jackson, Mississippi. And so that spirit, that determination will be alive, and she'll be there. You can hear her and buy the book. She will sign it. So if you got any questions, unknown caller, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, Sister Tamu Baba Oshie, of course, enjoying your wonderful show program. My sister, this is Haiba.
Oh, hey.
And I just want to say, I'm just feeling full listening to your presentation today. And we salute you, my sister. It's an honor for me to know you, to be your friend, to be your sister, to be your comrade. And we salute all your... I mean, just being a queen, being a beautiful warrior queen, and all what you've done for our people, all the sacrifices you made. And I just say, and I'm so happy and proud of this, the journey that you have, and looking so forward to your book. I just say about that.
Great.
And, So I had a question. I know you're having to sign in on, I guess, this Wednesday. Is that right?
A book signing, yeah.
Yeah, book signing. Yes, and is it any way possible to, any of that can be on Zoom, too? And I don't know if that would be possible, because sometimes we're still doing some sheltering in place and things.
Oh,
yeah. But I didn't know if it's any way possible. And how can we get the book if,
well,
you know.
Let me say this. I talked to Mama Nia. And at the Medu bookstore, Mama Tamu, and she would like to sell your book at the Medu bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall.
Okay.
You know, and
I was going to get around to going there and asking, but
okay.
I'm so glad. That's wonderful. That's great news. Thank you.
And also, too, I'm going to talk to the Black Dot Cultural Center and bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother Kazimde Ajamu, you know.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I will get back with you on the specifics and who I need to see and the phone numbers and all whatever. But I'll call you on that.
Sure. Please.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll definitely.
And
do
you
that.
Know, Mama Tomo, a question I had. You know, we give thanks that our brother, comrade, freedom fighter, your husband was able to be liberated.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was listening to you say that he had been sentenced to a lifelong, lifelong. And I'm so happy that he was able to overthrow that less than 10 years. And now we have many, many freedom fighters that are still having these lifelong terms like Matulo and Iman and more. And so I was just trying to see if it could be shared, some of the insight of how he was able to overthrow that and be liberated. And
well,
maybe it could help some of our other
incarcerated. To answer that question, however, I just have to say that was in the hands of the Creator and the ancestors, because what they did, it was really a fluke on their part. And when they realized what they had done, they tried to backtrack it. It took about another year or so, about two years. Yeah, it took a couple of years for our attorneys to get us back in court and to prove the point of, and they were successful. So.
And so all of the RNA 11 were exonerated.
Oh.
All but one, which is such a painful thing. I hate to even talk about it. I hate to even think of it. And he was too, but the youngest person among us was only 15 years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
He ended up serving more time than anybody else.
Oh.
And then when he did get out, he was on parole for the rest of his life, and he transitioned a couple years ago.
Oh, wow.
That thing breaks my heart.
Yeah.
But, and we were in touch with him, you know, before his passing and all that, you know, but after he got out.
Where was he from?
Louisiana.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. But, you know, that's why I played that song for you. By Chavin Duca, because that's what you needed in this instant, and all of y'all, because as I stated earlier, there are some brothers and sisters who have been in prison for decades on trumped up charges and so forth. And I'm not saying, you know, that, you know, we all deserve to have our cases looked at objectively and honestly and put before a jury of our peers, or to be looked at critically and exonerated. Because as we all know, you know, mass incarceration in this society against us is real, you know.
Yeah.
It is very real. And so I I'm so glad, because, you know, like I said, I really didn't know y'all. I knew it was beautiful that I just happened to be there. And and then, of course, when Tony Courtney gave me information about Us Lifting Us, you know, told me who was involved. And, you know. And I said, yeah. And then, of course, I had a chance to come here and to talk with Baba Akima, and then, of course, to work with us when we had the cafe going, and we'll continue to work with us,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's what's necessary, organization. You do things out of organization.
Yes.
You can't do anything without organization. And that's the, you know, the next phase that needs to continue to happen, that we develop things and organize around it. You know, you got some good pictures in here too, you know. You got some good, a few good pictures in here. And one of them was you took, was that a diagram or a picture of your cell when you, remember you had three sisters in the cell, two sisters in the cell? And
The sister, there was a young sister who an art student who drew that for me. Let me tell you, I don't draw, but I drew what was in my head. And that sister, when she finished, I just screamed. I'm like, this is the jail cell that I was
this
in.
This is it.
It. That's it.
Yeah. You know, that's me because you made you like a studio apartment.
I did. I had it hooked up.
Yeah, you sure
I
did.
I had to be there.
You had a little couch. You had a cocktail table.
Yep.
Yeah, you made it comfortable for yourself.
My little kitchen area. Yeah, I had it hooked up.
You know, and then of course the deep picture is, and I think that's Baba Akima right there when they were shackled, and they were being marched through the city. You know.
Now I was in that picture, but you just can't see me. You could just see the tail of my coat.
Okay.
Or a gown or something you can see, but that was something when they paraded us through the streets like that.
Yeah, I tell you, it will never end until we make it end. And then, of course, the beautiful picture of your wedding with you and Baba Akima, you're cutting the cake, and of course, then. Him doing something. You said he was a leather. He worked a lot with leather.
And he started that, picked that up while he was there and started doing leather. And I think, I don't know if I mentioned in the book that he made the first shoes that my two younger daughters.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. That's deep, ain't it? That's beautiful. And then, of course, there's a picture of the five of y'all in the, you know, sitting outside the car. Well, they're in the car.
And
you guys are on your, you're on your way to Atlanta at the time?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So I know it was a serious journey, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times in our lives, you know, we say, what is our fate? You know? And of course, you know, your situation is deep, but everybody has, as they say, their cross to bear, so to speak. And you just don't choose that; it happens. And and how do you deal with it? And to me, you dealt with it beautifully. You dealt with it forthright. You know, based upon how I know you now, and then what I read, you're a woman of tremendous strength and fortitude.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. You know, you ain't scared. You know, yeah.
It's like you do what you got to do.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, it's harrowing, you know, to be in jail for something you didn't do and to go through all of that humiliation, talking about you, calling you nigger, you know, giving you bad food and, I mean, all of it. Just so, but then again, when you are historically, if you're a historical people and understand that, then you understand what our people have gone through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you understand this history and so forth. And at least to me, I would say I'm meeting this challenge.
Yeah.
You know, because I know our people have gone through a lot worse when you consider the coffin lines being marched from hundreds of miles, you know, strung together, then put it into a dungeon for months.
And then
in a cramped dungeon, then into a cramped ship, and then of course to work from can't see in the morning, can't see at night for your rest of your damn life.
Yes.
You know, I don't know.
It is.
Yeah,
it's painful to think about it.
It is, and of course, these folks have our minds so messed up that some of our people don't even want to acknowledge it, don't even want to think about it, don't want to hear it. And just as I read the Inye Sesem, which I read every program, on Fridays I read 3 days. I read the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And, of course, on Monday I read Sunday and Monday. And what the brother said on the Sunday piece is just deep, because we've gone through all of this.
Mm-hmm.
All of this. And we are still here.
Still here.
Mm-hmm. It's a test to our, you know, our will, our fortitude, our believing in that no matter what obstacles or roadblocks or detours that are put in our path, you know, we will overcome them. And we will overcome them because we have faith. And together, see?
Yes.
Together, you know. Now,
yep.
Do you still keep in touch with any of the former members that you remember or know? How are they doing? Are some of them still, of course, with us?
Yeah, well, some of them are gone now. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, Imari passed on.
Mm-hmm. Imari Obadeli, yep, he passed on many years ago. Because Imari Obadeli was also within Cobra.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was in Cobra.
Oh, yeah. And he don't know who started it all, but he was definitely in the forefront.
Yeah, definitely. That's how I met him. I didn't meet him through public. I met him through in Cobra. I was a member of in Cobra. And what is that, Janetta Coleman?
I can't remember her last name.
Yeah.
I kind of got confused when you said Coleman.
Yeah, Janetta.
But anyway.
Mm-hmm. And so... You know, he was he was an inspirational brother, really.
Oh,
you
know? Yes, he was.
So, you know, because for me, although I did come up that way, I wasn't real, but I got into it and it gave me the spark. Now, of course, in the 70s, mm-hmm. I got a little turned around, but I guess when I got on the fire department, it provided a chance for me to read. You know, just sitting at the firehouse, I began to read and say, and then wanted to connect with organizations.
Right.
Know? And although early on, like the late 70s into the early 80s, I was involved in NAACP.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was the vice president, you know.
Mm.
And my good friend, Brother Muhammad Abdullah, he was the executive director. And so we went to did a few things together. But then after that, I don't know. I began to gravitate to more, you know, more stronger organizations. And because I began to understand and realize, you know, this integration thing is not for us. We cannot, these people are not for us. And in fact, they're going to be our detriment. So I began to look at the Association for the Classical Africans of Civilizations, ASCAC. I became a member of ASCAC.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Became a member in the 80s. I missed the great trip, to Kemet in 86 when over 1,000 of our people went to Kemet.
Wow.
Led by Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, Dr. Hilliard, many of our great scholars. And we was coming back to reclaim what's ours.
Yeah.
You know? And some people that I know and dear, they went there. And then I became a member of ASCAC and then the National Black United Front. My good brother Conrad World, whose birthday it was a few days ago, he joined the Ancestors, I think, last year. Yeah, Conrad is, love Conrad, believe me. And so, you know, I always just wanted to make something happen for us. I fell in love with us. I fell in love with Africa, and I fell in love with Africans. And that's why I changed my name. I changed my name back in the 80s, and it became official in 1992. Because I had a sister who was a paralegal, and she helped me. All I had to do was get the forms from the legal forms store. I don't remember how much that cost, and And then she did the paperwork on it. I did the filing. I went to court on it and went to see the clerk, the commissioner. So I wanted to do it legally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to be right. I know many of us, we have African names, you know, but we still have the name that, because, hey, Mama Tamu, this brother said, oh, yeah, you changed your name. What do your paychecks say? What does your paycheck say? And you know he's right, because
you know, right.
I said, man, my paycheck says Oceania Adelabu.
That's good. That's
great. What your paycheck say? You know.
But you know, speaking of that, believe it or not, during the time when I moved to Mississippi to be near Hakima, so I guess that was like seven. Well, I don't know, maybe 82. I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
Because he was here then.
Right.
But that was in the 80s, in the late 70s.
Late 70s. Okay.
Yeah. Mississippi, it was a court building. I can't remember exactly which building it was, but they actually had like a little section where you could go and get your name changed.
Oh.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
That's a strange place.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they did.
Well, you know, I had to go in front of the court commissioner. Of course, the main thing they ask you, are you changing your name to, you know, I'm changing my name to protect the innocent. But, you know, they want to know, are you trying to escape creditors and stuff like that? Are you changing your name? So, you know, and it's just a formal question, you know. And so I stated to them, that's why I'm doing it. And, mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know. I've only time I've had an issue was when somebody knew that my name wasn't Eddie Brown anymore, and they were doing it disrespectfully. You know.
Oh yeah.
See, other than that, and that's few. And so, you know, to me, I respect anybody who wants to be called what they want to be called, what they want to say that their name is. You know, then I respect that. You know, and so I know that. Baba Kima's name was Tom Norman, and that's how I first knew of him, you know.
Yeah.
And but also too, I just found him just to be a, and I know you know this, a very brilliant man, a very strong man, you know.
Yeah.
So and
And I don't know why I didn't. Or we didn't change our names. I know for one thing, for the Republic of Africa, you know, the teaching was, you know, we didn't have to ask for permission to do anything. And so if we changed our name, that was just it. And so I guess, but there were times I wish I had, particularly in raising my children,
mm-hmm.
because there were, that presented contradictions in their little minds. Why they had to be, you know, what their last name, because they had African names for their first name, but why did they have to sign their name as Norman
mm-hmm.
instead of Kenyama? So, you know, I had those times when I wished I had done it earlier in life, but at a point it's like, well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We can correct things as they come along, you know.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that you and Baba Kima, after all that you've gone through, you stayed fast, you maintained that faith, and y'all developed a beautiful family and a strong family here in the Atlanta area that are known for, you know, doing positive things to help our people. Your daughter's school. How was her school coming along, by the way?
It's coming along very well.
Good.
Yep.
Good. Yep. You know, and of course, Shay, she does the financial piece that she does, and just dynamic. Yeah. So, I mean, you raised three beautiful daughters, and I know that sad part a couple years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, that will always be with us, you know, but, you know, we try and keep it moving. As a matter of fact, where the book signing is going to be at my daughter's shop, Noni's shop.
Oh, okay.
And that's Tony's mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. How old was Tony when he was murdered?
22.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sorry, dear. And that's, I know that's always going to be tough for you. In fact, you said in the book that, you know, you'll go to your grave still hurting because of that. Yeah. Because sometimes you see a child and mm-hmm. you start recognizing things at an early age and you see their development. You know they're going to mm-hmm. do something, you know? They're just not just a kid that goes along. He or she, they're going to do something, and they're going to do something
right.
tremendous. You know, they're intelligent. They're outgoing. You know, they have ideas, and you know, and that's the beauty. I mean, when you have a child that you nurture and help, and you more than willing to help them because of the fact they're going to do something. They're saying out there being lazy and you know,
right.
give me $50, grandma, to get these. Earn them, earn that
right.
money. But you know that they're going to do something, and you support that. And
absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So we only have a few more minutes, Mama Tamu. And I know that the event is on Wednesday. Anything else you want to say in relation to what you had experienced and how it shaped your life and how it molded you as the strong woman that you are with the family, beautiful family that you have?
Well, it has taught me I wouldn't say taught me to really appreciate the community, but it definitely opened my eyes and let me know that the community, you know, we didn't do this by ourselves. You know, mm-hmm. of course, there's the creator, but the community was such a good undergird for our family.
Mm-hmm.
And helping us to maintain it, you know, like I said, and we didn't do it by ourselves, you know. And I appreciate the community for so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and it's worth fighting for.
Yes. Yes, it is. You know, because you know, I've dedicated my life to raising consciousness of our people. Mm-hmm. That's my existence. I do this radio program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for 2 hours or more.
Yeah.
What do I have to do to do that? I support anything that is about us and helping to elevate us. I support that, you know? And
mm-hmm.
not just saying I support it. I may support it with some dough, some cash, or support it with some time, some energy, some sweat equity, whatever the case may be, you know? You know, I envision Africa being liberated. I envision Africa. I know I may never see it, but to me, mm-hmm. if it doesn't happen, we are eliminated.
That's right. It's like a must.
It is. Yes.
It's, you know, and it has to be a burning desire in your soul and in your spirit that no matter what it looks like now, no matter the challenges that we face, And it looks like, you know, maybe an impossibility, but we've got to know that that's wrong. It is possible, and it is, and we've got to know and believe that it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And we do whatever we can do with our energy to make it happen.
That's right. Constantly, you continue to fight. You continue to organize. You continue to believe. And I know, you know, I went to a rites of passage for a young man this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a little, you know, after the ceremony itself was over, I had an opportunity to say a few words to him personally. And I told him, I said, man, listen, Forrest Gump said life is like a box of chocolates. Bump that. Life ain't that little damn box. Life is like a roller coaster with a series of ups and downs for everybody. And how you handle those downs determine how successful you'll be in your life. Some people couldn't handle them. They became drug addicts or alcoholics. Some committed suicide. They couldn't handle them. And and it wasn't because they didn't have resources or money. You never know what a person is going through. I mean, I had, as a firefighter, I had 3 suicides in 1 week, you know?
Ooh, wow.
And suicides don't make the paper, but more people commit suicide than are murdered because it only only if you do something horrific or public will it make the paper, or if you're a person of note. Otherwise, you know, that doesn't make the paper, you know?
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, they couldn't handle those downs. But if you continue to have faith, and hopefully those downs are small, then you can continue, as the Les Brown, motivational speaker, used to say, mm-hmm. if you can look up, you can get up, you know? Mm. So keep getting up. And yeah. that's for our people to keep getting up. And I know when I see you and I see Baba Kima and see your beautiful family and I've seen all the things that you've done, you've always believed you just keep getting up. There's still things that we must do and can do to liberate our people, because my vision is not integration, living in some. No, my vision is that African people have self-determination. African people have sovereignty. They control their resources. They control their land. They control all the things that they need us to sustain them. They grow their own food. They make their own clothes. Mm-hmm. They make whatever it is that we need. You know, that's my vision. You know, that we ain't beholden to nobody. But right. I know Mama Tambua doesn't look good at this moment.
Yep.
But, you know, but I have faith that eventually more and more of those of us who are thinking this way, who believe in this, mm-hmm. you know, continue to come together and make it happen.
That's you know? Right.
Yeah. So give me some final words, dear. I know I will see you on Wednesday. That's this Wednesday at the Core. Mm-hmm. And that's located 2857 Main Street here in Atlanta. Well, East Point, Georgia.
Yeah.
You know? The program begins at 5:00. You know, it's 4 to 8, and go ahead.
Well, it starts at 4, but I'll just be speaking at 5.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so it's an event that you might want to be at, because the significance of it. This is the 50th year. I remember the incident, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. Yeah, a lot of things that happen in August, don't it? Black August.
Yep.
Yeah.
But incidentally, one of our persons that were arrested with us, Juma, he was he was the second to the youngest, because he was 17 at the time. Mm-hmm. He called and let me know, because I told him that the book signing was going to be, you know, on August 18th, and he mm-hmm. called and reminded me that it was also on a Wednesday when we got arrested.
Is that right?
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Is he possibly going to be there? Because he's the one that really kind of helped save your life.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did. Yeah, because I think my brain went somewhere else or something. And he, because I'm thinking that when we got in the dungeon or what, the hole or
right,
whatever
right.
in the ground.
Tunnel
I'm thinking that
uh-huh.
the next step was to get out.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying my best to get out, and he grabbed my foot and pulled me back in, because
mm-hmm.
they would have riddled me with bullets if I came running out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Things happen
yes.
for a reason. Yes. Yeah. Well, I hope that for all those brothers and sisters, and the family members of the Republic of New Africa, 11, that mm-hmm. have gone through their this situation, you know, I hope they get a chance to read your book, send them the book, so they can know, you know, how it was, and they can reflect on
mm-hmm.
that on that situation. So
yep,
yeah. Well, Mama Tamu, I thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you on Wednesday,
okay.
And my good friend Baba Kima and, mm-hmm. and all the family. And I hope those who are in the Atlanta area come out to the Core, 2857 Main Street in East Point. From 4 to 8, Mama Tamu mm-hmm. will be speaking around 5. And, mm-hmm. you know, and to enjoy themselves and be part of listening and hearing about what they went through. And why the struggle must continue. It's never going to end until we are free. It's never going to stop until we are free. Self-determining, independent, and sovereign. Never going to end. Thank you, Mama Tamu.
And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Talk to you soon. All right. Peace.
Brothers and sisters, we end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate you listening, whether you listen by phone, computer, your phone, your telephone, or whatever, your cell phone, whatever way you listen, and those who call in and contribute, I really do. I really do. But you can rest assured that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, I'm going to come here on this radio and coming from my heart and my mind to help liberate and develop sovereignty for African people. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. And once again, I have a program with Renoko. That's my tribute to my good friend, Baba Renoko Rashidi. And my guest will be Brother Sangar Bay out of D.C. Hope to see you then. Peace, family.